Please, tell me what you did figure out.
Not much, Iverson said. It was fast, and it seemed to attack the central nervous system. No one survived it. Those that didn't die of it directly seemed to get themselves killed through accidents or sloppy procedure. We noticed. Eventually, someone died who was responsible for keeping the fusion reactor running properly. It didn't blow up, did it?
No, just spewed out a lot more neutrons than normal. Too much for the shielding to contain. Then it went into emergency shutdown mode. Some people were killed by the radiation, but most died of the cold that came afterward.
Hmm. Except you. Iverson nodded. If I hadn't had to go back for that component, I'd have been one of them. Obviously, I couldn't risk returning. Even if I could have got the reactor working again, there was still the problem of the contaminant.
He breathed in deeply, as if steeling himself to recollect what had happened next. So I weighed my options and decided dying, freezing myself, was my only hope. No one was going to come from Earth to help me, even if I could have kept myself alive. Not for decades, anyway. So I took a chance. One that paid off. Like I said, I was the lucky one.
Iverson took another sip from the glass Clavain had brought him.
Man, that tastes better than anything I've ever drunk in my life. What's in this, by the way?
Just water. Glacial water. Purified, of course.
Iverson nodded slowly and put the glass down next to his bed.
Not thirsty now?
Quenched my thirst nicely, thank you.
Good.
Clavain stood up. I'll let you get some rest, Andrew. If there's anything you need, anything we can do, just call out. I'll be sure to.
Clavain smiled and walked to the door, observing Iverson's obvious relief that the questioning session was over for now. But Iverson had said nothing incriminating, Clavain reminded himself, and his responses were entirely consistent with the fatigue and confusion anyone would feel after so long a sleep. Or dead, depending on how you defined Iverson's period on ice. It was unfair to associate him with Setterholm's death, just because of the few indistinct marks gouged in ice, and the faint possibility that Setterholm had been murdered. Still, Clavain paused before leaving the room.
One other thing, Andrew. Just something that's been bothering me, and I wondered if you could help.
Go ahead.
Would the initials I, V, and F mean anything to you?
Iverson thought about it for a moment, then shook his head.
Sorry, Neville. You've got me there.
Well, it was just a shot in the dark, Clavain said.
Iverson was strong enough to walk around the next day. He insisted on exploring the rest of the base, not simply the parts of it that the conjoiners had taken over. He wanted to see for himself the damage that he had heard about and see the lists of the dead, and the manner in which they had died that Clavain and his friends had assiduously compiled.
Clavain kept a watchful eye on the man, aware of how emotionally traumatic the whole experience must be. He was bearing it well, but that could easily have been a front. Galliana's machines could tell a lot about how his brain was functioning, but they were unable to probe Iverson's state of mind at the resolution needed to map emotional well-being. Clavain, meanwhile, strove as best he could to keep Iverson in the dark about the conjoiners. He did not want to overwhelm Iverson with strangeness at this delicate time, did not want to shatter the man's illusion that he had been rescued by a group of normal human beings. But it turned out to be easier than he had expected, as Iverson showed surprisingly little interest in the history he had missed. Clavain had gone as far as telling him that the Sandrovoy was technically a ship full of refugees, fleeing the aftermath of a war between various factions of solar system humanity. But Iverson had done little more than nod, never probing Clavain for more details about the war. Once or twice Clavain had even alluded accidentally to the Trans-Enlightenment, that shared consciousness state that the conjoiners had reached. But Iverson had shown the same lack of interest. He was not even curious about the Sandrovoy herself, never once asking Clavain what the ship was like. It was not quite what Clavain had been expecting. But there were rewards, too. Iverson, it turned out, was fascinated by Felka, and Felka herself seemed pleasantly amused by the newcomer. It was perhaps not all that surprising. Galiana and the others had been busy helping Felka grow the neural circuitry necessary for normal human interactions, adding new layers to supplant the functional regions that had never worked properly. But in all that time, they had never introduced her to another human being that she had not already met. And here was Iverson, not just a new voice, but a new smell, a new face, a new way of walking, a deluge of new input for her starved mental routines. Claudine watched the way Felka latched onto Iverson when he entered a room, her attention snapping to him, her delight evident. And Iverson seemed perfectly happy to play the games that so wearied the others, the kind of intricate challenges that Felka adored. For hours on end, he watched the two of them lost in concentration, Iverson pulling mock faces of sorrow, or, on the rare occasions when he beat her, extravagant joy. Felka responded in kind, her face more animated, more plausibly human than Clavain had ever believed possible. She spoke more often in Iverson's presence than she had ever done in his, and the utterances she made more closely approximated well-formed, grammatically sound sentences than the disjointed shards of language Clavain had grown to recognize. It was like watching a difficult backward child suddenly come alight in the presence of a skilled teacher. Clavain thought back to the time when he had rescued Felka from Mars, and how unlikely it had seemed then that she would ever grow into something resembling a normal adult human, as sensitized to others' feelings as she was to her own. Now he could almost believe it would happen. Yet half the distance she had come had been due to Iverson's influence rather than his own. Afterwards, when even Iverson had wearied of Felka's ceaseless demands for games, Clavain spoke to him quietly, away from the others. "You're good with her, aren't you?" Iverson shrugged as if the matter was of no great consequence to him. "Yeah, I like her. We both enjoy the same kinds of games." "If there's a problem..." He must have detected Clavain's irritation. "No, no problem at all." Clavain put a hand on his shoulder. "There's more to it than just games, though, you have to admit. She's a pretty fascinating case, Neville." "I don't disagree. We value her highly." He flinched, aware of how much the remark sounded like one of Galiana's typically flat statements. "But I'm puzzled. You've been revived after nearly a century asleep. We've come here by a ship that couldn't even have been considered a distant possibility in your own era. We've undergone massive social and technical upheavals in the last 100 years. There are things about us, things about me I haven't told you yet, things about you I haven't even told you yet." "I'm just taking things one step at a time, that's all." Iverson shrugged and looked distantly past Clavain, through the window behind him. His gaze must have been skating across kilometers of ice toward Diadem's white horizon, unable to find a purchase. "I admit I'm not really interested in technological innovations. I'm sure your ship's really nice, but it's just applied physics, just engineering. There may be some new quantum principles underlying your propulsion system, but if that's the case, it's probably just an elaborate curlicue on something that was already pretty baroque to begin with. You haven't smashed the light barrier, have you?" He read Clavain's expression accurately. "No, didn't think so." "Maybe if you had, so what exactly does interest you?" Iverson seemed to hesitate before answering, but when he did speak, Clavain had no doubt that he was telling the truth. There was a sudden missionary fervor in his voice. "Emergence. Specifically, the emergence of complex, almost unpredictable patterns from systems governed by a few simple laws. Consciousness is an excellent example. A human mind's really just a web of simple neuronal cells wired together in a particular way. The laws governing the functioning of those individual cells aren't all that difficult to grasp. A cascade of well-studied electrical, chemical, and enzymic processes. The tricky part is the wiring diagram. It certainly isn't encoded in DNA in any but the crudest sense. Otherwise, why would a baby bother growing neural connections that are pruned down before birth? That'd be a real waste. If you had a perfect blueprint for the conscious mind, you'd only bother forming the connections you needed. No, the mind organizes itself during growth, and that's why it needs so many more neurons that it'll eventually incorporate into functioning networks. It needs the raw material to work with as it gropes its way toward a functioning consciousness. The pattern emerges, bootstrapping itself into existence in the pathways that aren't used or aren't